Welcome to episode 17 of the In Their Own League podcast. I am your host for today, Rosa, as you may have already known. I don't have a British accent, so no Bianca for today. I'm taking over for her just for this one episode. And yes, very, very excited to talk about this film, very much anticipated movie. And I could not be happier to be accompanied by three of In Their Own League contributors, amazing, talented writers. First up, I have Morgan Roberts. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Rosa. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Next up, Nicole Ackman. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
I'm so excited to be here, and I'm so excited to talk about this movie with you guys.
Thank you. And last but not least, Erica Richards. Thank you so much for being here with me.
Yay! I'm so excited to talk about Promising Young Woman. I cannot wait.
I think we all are. Yeah. This film is certainly one that has... It gained a lot of buzz earlier this year over at Sundance, which seems like ages ago. But yes, it gained a lot of buzz, a lot of critically acclaimed feedback from Sundance. Unfortunately, I did attend Sundance, but I didn't get the opportunity to watch the film there. I wasn't giving credentials to watch it. But I watched it, and I've seen it 5 times as of today.
Wow.
And it's definitely one of my favorite films of the year. So, yeah, I'm just going to go around with you ladies and then just ask you just your overall thoughts on the film. And, yeah, so I'm just going to go ahead and start with Morgan. Morgan, what did you think of Promising Young Woman?
I think Promising Young Woman was kind of like the feminist vengeance anthem we've been needing, especially after four very long years of a certain person in our lives, and also 2020 just being a garbage fire. So I think all of those things were kind of encapsulated into the film so beautifully, and it kind of blows my mind that Emerald Fennell, this is her first feature film.
Yes. And
that's a pretty high bar.
Yes, yes, I agree. It's certainly a film worth noting, particularly for a directorial feature film debut. Yeah, I entirely agree with what you just said. Nicole, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, like you were saying, I think 2020 has been a very strong year for directorial debuts, especially from female directors. But I think it's hard to deny that Emerald Fennell is one of the best. I have been hearing about this film for so long because I also write for Next Best Picture, like Bianca does. And my editor there, Matt, saw it at Sundance, and he's been hyping it up since January. And I'm a huge fan of Carey Mulligan. She's one of my favorite actresses, so I was so ready to see this. And I haven't watched it 5 times like you, Rosa, but the day I watched it one day whenever I got my screener, and I actually watched it the next day again, because I feel like it is one of those films that there's so much to unpack in it, and it's such an like, for what it's about stylistically, it's such a fun movie that I like wanted to spend more time with it, even though it's about quite a dark subject. And I could talk about this film all day. I keep telling everyone that I know like to see it, and I know that there are criticisms of it, and I think that they're legitimate, but I think it is such a strong movie.
Yes, yes, I absolutely agree with you. I got the opportunity to meet with Matt at Sundance, and he would not shut up about this film.
Well, just know he hasn't stopped since January.
Exactly. Yes. If you follow him on social media, that's all he tweets about. So you can just imagine in person how he's like. Yep. So yes, Erica, what did you think overall about this film?
Yeah, it's funny because I kind of have a combination of all of your answers. I've been waiting for this film forever. I remember seeing a preview of it in the theater like forever ago. And like my cousin and I always go to the movies together, and I looked over at her and I'm like, oh yeah, like that's going to be fantastic. And then of course, all of us here, you know, big fans of Matt at Next Picture. Yeah. And he's been, and like, he has just heightened my excitement for it. And like, honestly, like, I couldn't wait anymore. Like, I had to get a screener. I had to see it. Like, I could not wait. And it definitely, you know, for something that's so hyped, it still very much met my expectations, even exceeded them. It's what I thought it was going to be, but also, you know, different from what I thought it was going to be, but I loved it. And Nicole, I did the same thing. I watched it back to back. And I honestly, like, I cannot wait for Christmas Day when it comes out so I can watch it again. And I also have been telling everyone I know about it. And it's so funny because I feel like because there's so much social media talk about it that, you know, when I tell people and they haven't even heard about it, I'm like, where have you been? Have you been under a rock? Like, are you living on planet Earth? I mean, like, you know, I'm just like, how have you not heard about this? But I forget those of us not in like the film Twitter like atmosphere just like maybe don't even know about it. So I also have just been telling everyone I know to seek it out this Christmas. So
yes, I echo everything you all said. This film, I've been waiting for it since Sundance, and yes, I've seen it 5 times, and it's certainly, of course, Matt has a lot to do with it. He's been hyping it up so much that you do go to the movie with a certain set of expectations, and rarely does a film exceed them or meet them. So in my case, it definitely met them. And again, I may be a little bit biased because I am a big, big, humongous Carey Mulligan fan. She is one of my favorite actors currently working, and to see her in this role was just mind-boggling to me. She's amazing. I'm still bitter that she didn't get any recognition for Wildlife. But yes, certainly. It's certainly a movie, it's a very timely film. And yeah, in general, in terms of the themes, the topics, and everything, the tone, the aesthetic, the soundtrack. I kid you not, before we started, we connected with this. Before we connected, we started doing the podcast. I listened to that song Boys like 20 times.
Yeah.
It's been stuck in my head since watching this.
Yes. I also have been listening to the soundtrack at work. I'll just like put it on when I'm like working, and yeah, it's so good. It's so good. Everything about this film is so good.
Yes. So just to give like a general summary of the film, it's written and directed, as previously mentioned, by Emerald Fennell. It stars Carey Mulligan, Laverne Cox, Burnham, Jennifer Coolidge, and Alfred Molina. And it follows a young woman, Cassandra, who's portrayed by Carey Mulligan. She's traumatized by a tragic event in her past, and seeking out revenge against those who cross her path or the individuals who had something to do with that traumatic event. She just goes out there and decides to take matters in her own hands in a very unique and yet satisfying for me way. there's just so much to talk about this film, in this film, because there's to me, this film, it encapsulates so much of what many of us have been experiencing, and many of us before us, many women in general, have been experiencing throughout. And again, I guess everything is just amazing. Amazing. I love this. So in terms of audience, who do you guys think this film is aimed towards? Because I've gone to Rotten Tomatoes and I've read reviews and I've done a little bit of research on it. And although it's overwhelmingly positively received, but it does not surprise me to see that this film is being interpreted as or received as like radical or woke or very extreme liberally feminist. So who do you guys think this film is aimed towards? Anybody can jump in. I don't mind.
Honestly, like when I gave my review, like my, you know, what did you think back to the PR team, I told them that I hope this film scares the shit out of men for years and years to come. And I honestly do. I do think this is a film made for women. Especially like sharing their stories. I think it thematically perfectly encapsulates how something, you know, like the tragic, you know, traumatizing thing that these women went through, right? This, you know, again, not to spoil anything here, but the characters, you know, are dealing with a sexual encounter, right? Like unwelcome sexual encounter. And I think this film perfectly shows how something like that will completely change a woman's life. And for a man, it's just a blip on their timeline, right? Like it's just a thing that happened and they move on and, you know, people don't want to talk about it or people don't want to deal with it. And for some people, it literally controls and changes their entire lives. And I think that's something that's really going to resonate with people when they finally do get to see it. You know, I hope to me that theme came through pretty clear that, you know, like this people would rather just like sweep it under the rug or not deal with it. And some people like, for example, Cassie, like this becomes her life, right? Like this becomes, you know, trying to, you know, make it right in her head or however she's trying to deal with it. It literally becomes her entire life. That's all she cares about. So
I would agree with that. I also think, and I don't want to generalize in this, but in the people that I've talked to about this film, I also think that it does resonate pretty strongly with gay men as well, because I think that they do have some more of that shared experience with women whenever it comes to this topic. But I also think there's a part of it that's maybe aimed towards, there are a lot of different sort of people that we see in this movie in terms of men, and I think that it maybe could be a wake-up call for men who are sort of bystanders to the things that we see, sort of the kind of guys who maybe are I'm trying to like talk about this without giving spoilers, but people kind of like the Bo Burnham character in it, that I think are, you know, they wouldn't consider themselves to be sort of like more the villains of this piece, but maybe it's a topic that they haven't actually thought about this way before, and haven't thought about their own role in it before. And I think that for them, it could sort of be a wake up call to what actually happens for women.
Yeah. I think it also, there's pieces of it too, that, you know, it is about women and the shared traumas that we experience, but it's also a little bit about like our own internalized misogyny and the way that we excuse things as well. Again, not for lack of spoilers, I mean, Connie Britton's character and Alison Brie's characters are really great examples of the way that women can both benefit from the patriarchy as well as being victims of the patriarchy. And it's kind of difficult to sit with because, you know, many people, regardless of gender, have instances where in hindsight they should have acted better or should have done better or should have believed someone. And it's not until either they have that experience or they have just lived life a little bit more that they see the error of it. And trying to reconcile that is not an easy feat.
Yeah, I think you both said that perfectly. And like, honestly, Nicole, thinking back to you talking about like bystanders and stuff. And I think that's a really good point, because I took a bunch of notes the second time I watched it. The first time I just wanted to like absorb it. The second time I was like, you know, I took like 5 pages of notes. But I think too, like, I remember writing that, you know, in the beginning, there's some time, there's, you know, she, and I think everyone knows this from the previews, right? She's faking being drunk so that men will take her home. And then when they try to make moves on her, and when she's too drunk, she then like, you know, immediately sobers up, right? And I remember I wrote down like one of the first times that happens to her, that one of the men keeps telling her like, you're safe, you're safe, you're safe. And like, he thinks that because he's like, he thinks he's a good guy, right? And like, he thinks like, oh, well, I'm not going to murder her. I'm just going to like, you know, have sex with her, even though she's way too drunk to even consent. And he thinks that because he's not going to murder her or harm her, he thinks he's not harming her, right? He thinks he's putting her in a safe position. And like, that's just not the case. And I think because a lot of times, you know, women are looked at as like, well, she was drunk and she went home with him, so that's her fault, right? Or like, you know, like you said, Morgan, like the Alison Brie character or like Connie Britton, it's like they don't care until they're in the situation or it's happening to them. So I think, like you said, I hope this shines a light on it for people to look at things in a different way and change their perspective.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely to everything you all said. And I think my only, whatever little issue I have, and it's particularly very minor, is the marketing aspect of this film. How the trailer gives you an idea or a notion of what type of film you're going to be watching, but in reality, you watch a completely, entirely different film, in my case. And I guess that is something that's, to be honest, that's my only complaint about the film, the marketing aspect of it. And it's not even the film's fault, in some sense. So did you guys also experience that, or was it just me?
Oh, I totally agree. I think, there's a part of me that, like, wonders if they purposely did it because they were trying to draw in an audience maybe that wouldn't expect this. But I do feel like it's mismarketed. And I feel like maybe there are people who thought, oh, I don't want to see that, who actually would enjoy the movie. Mm-hmm. And I do think that there are a lot of people who feel a little bit like, I almost want to say betrayed by the marketing, mm-hmm. just because what it promises is something so different than what you get. And I think it's a much smarter movie than the marketing shows. But again, like, that's not, it's not the movie's fault. It's not Emerald right. Fennell's fault. It's like, Who in the marketing department decided to do this?
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. I think I don't know if I thought it was going to be more of like a slasher kind of thing. Like, you know, they show her in the previews, like kind of marking off like numbers. So you think she's like, I don't know, maybe am I wrong? Did you guys think that too? Like, I thought she was like killing these men, which like, I mean, I don't know. Like you said, it would have been a completely different film. And I think after you see her with the first, like the next morning, and she's eating that like jelly donut or whatever, and the jelly donut yes. all down her arm. And I thought it was blood. Immediately, I thought it was blood. I'm like, oh, she killed that guy. And then I'm like, oh no, she's just eating a jelly donut. And it's like all down her arm.
It's maybe frightening how here for it I was. And then I was like, oh yes. Okay, that's cool too.
Yes, she's not even like, she's walking in broad daylight with the blood on her. Like, she doesn't even care. And then I'm like, oh, that's jelly donut. Like, same, Nicole. I was like so here for her murdering these men. I thought it was going to be a slasher film. Like, I was so here for it. And then I'm like, oh, like you said, this is so much smarter and intelligent than what the previews make it to be.
Well, and maybe it's because my super fun theoretical orientation in school was existential psychotherapy, but I kind of find the twist, almost like the red herring of the marketing strategy, to be a little bit symbolic of what the film is as a whole, because you tonally, the film has like essentially three very separate arcs within a major arc. Because like, at first her targets are very arbitrary, then her target moves to people peripherally involved in the situation that harmed her friend, and then it becomes extremely targeted at the very end. And you don't know when those shifts are going to occur. Like, I didn't know that we were essentially going to go from I'm stunting myself by spending every night trying to make self-proclaimed nice guys learn that they're actually not nice, to here's me basically having a checklist now, which was not how we were structurally at the beginning of the film. And so part of me wonders if like that marketing strategy was to pull the several red herrings that occur and those twists that occur throughout that film to be like, there's no way that you can expect what anyone is going to do or how anyone's going to act. But that's how I took it. I guess right. That's just, though.
No, I totally see. And like, even, you know, I can't wait to talk about the Bo Burnham character, because I think there's so much to unpack there. I don't know if you guys immediately think like, oh, we can't trust him, this is too good to be true? Like, or were you like, what was your feelings towards him?
I saw a tall white guy and I said, don't trust him.
Right.
Y'all, he got me. I think partially because it's Bo Burnham and like, I just trust Bo Burnham. But like, I know this is also a personal failing of mine, like him in this movie, I was like, oh, that's my type. Right. But he really had me. Like, also there's that early scene of his in the coffee shop, where he drinks the coffee and I was like, I'm so concerned. I think it's an effective quarantine, but I'm so attracted to this right now. Yes. The line about the bicycle, like, he really had me. I felt like, I mean, they got me good. Like,
yeah, I wanted to. It was one of those things where, like, he, you know, he shows up and he's so charming and so fun and quirky and cute and like all these things. And I loved how she was just like not hat and like she's so sassy. And I love that too. But as soon as I found out he was from like their school, their med school as well, I was like, no, we can't trust it. Like, we immediately can't trust him because we know what happened, right? Like, but we don't know what happened, but we do know what happened. You know what I mean? And as soon as we found out that that's how he was connected to her, I was like, no. I was like, they're going to want me to fall in love with him. And I was falling in love with him. And then I was like, no, I can't. Like, I know something bad's going to happen.
You were smarter than I was.
Yeah, you absolutely were, because I caught on to that probably on my fourth and fifth viewing, and then I have this little theory about it, which I think it's perfect timing to get into spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I think this is a perfect timing, perfect segue to get into spoilers. So after right now, we're gonna go into deep spoilers. So if you guys don't want to know anything, you don't want to get this film spoiled, you can go ahead and stop here and then watch the film and then come back and listen to our thoughts. But overall, I think we're all pretty content that we recommend watching this film, right?
Oh, 1000%.
Yes, very much.
Cool. So yes, spoilers starting right now. And yeah, continuing with the Bo Burnham character, after seeing the last few two times, I came up with the theory that she never actually cared for him, and it was her plan the whole time to keep him close to her because she knew he was her only connection to the other people involved.
Oh, that's a really good theory, because I mean, she does use him to get to what was her name? Madison?
Yeah.
Get to Madison to eventually get to the bachelor party. Right. And
because she's too smart. She came across as very smart to all of a sudden just go out on a date with somebody just randomly who just spit on her coffee, which is one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah. Rosa, do you think she also was kind of falling for him too? Like, or do you think that was all an act? Because I do think she was like, I don't disagree with you, because I think she was definitely like, oh, I can use him. But then I think she was devastated when she found out that he was there when the whole thing happened to Nina, which was her best friend, that happened to. I agree with you. I think she was using him to get closer, but then she really was starting to fall in love with him. But was like, it was kind of that thing where, Morgan, like you said in the beginning, like, we recognize those things about ourselves where, like, okay, he was friends with them, but he wasn't involved, so it's okay. You know, like, that's kind of how I saw it. Was like that she kind of was like, okay, I'll use him to get closer and accomplish the things I want to accomplish, but I'm falling for him at the same time, but it's okay because he's not like one of those guys. And then and then when she, you know, hears him on that video of her friend, you know, it happening, and she realizes that he was there, I think that was the moment that she's like, you know, I think that was the moment for her. Do you guys agree with what I'm saying?
I would totally agree. I think, you know, there's that moment where she talks to Nina's mom, and Nina's mom is basically like, you have to let this go. And it seems like she's decided that she is going to, you know, move on with her life and kind of go forward. And she brings him home to dinner with her parents and like things look like, okay, maybe her life is actually going to turn around and she's accomplished what she needs to. And then whenever there is that betrayal and she finds out that he was there, she's like, oh no, I actually have to kick up what I'm doing a notch and finish this. And I think that like, it is that thing where I think, especially like on a second watch, it's very obvious that in the beginning, she is just like, oh, I can use him. I can get to the people that I want to get to. This is a great thing that's fallen into my lap. But then at a certain point, she's like, oh, no, like he genuinely seems like a good guy. Like he's not like these other men.
Exactly.
And I think the film is so smart in doing that because I do think it kind of lures us into being like, oh, well, like, yeah, maybe she's right. Maybe he isn't like those other guys. And then it's like, just kidding. Psych.
Right. Because really, are all men the same? Like, let's be real. Like, all men are the same, unfortunately. And that's, but again, that goes back to that theme that I was talking about in the beginning, where I think like these men that think that they're good men and good guys, like, are they really? Like, you think that just because you're not what you in your head define as harming someone, or like your involvement with harming someone, what you see fit and what really is in reality is what's happening. Like, again, just because he's like, quote unquote, not involved, but then you realize how involved he really was, like this whole bystander thing, right? Like, you know, he could have stopped when it was happening to Nina and he didn't. He was right there watching it go down and he didn't step, the good guy steps in and stops it, right? And like, he wasn't that. So
I also think what's interesting is that they kind of parallel the Alfred Molina character, I think, is really interesting. This lawyer who is involved in all these court cases.
Yes.
And kind of helped with hushing up these women and getting these men out of legal trouble and whatever. But I think what's interesting is that she kind of lets him off. She doesn't do the thing that she had planned for him because she sees that he is the only man that we see in the film who is genuinely remorseful. He actually, you know, he says he's sorry. He says like you can see it's his knowledge of what he has done is destroying him. Right. And I think that's really interesting when you contrast it with even the Bo Burnham character. Once he's called out, he doesn't say he's sorry. Right. And like, I noticed that on a second time, even when he's trying to talk her down, he never like admits his own guilt. He never shows any remorse. And it almost seems like Emerald Fennell is saying that like, the only way forward is if these people who have this sort of bystander effect, if they can recognize their own involvement and can show genuine remorse, then yeah, like that is their own punishment that they have to live with knowing what they did. Right. Whereas, you know, for these other guys who like can't even admit that what they did was wrong, this character of Casey is like, no, she's still going to get them.
Right.
Yeah. I found that piece really interesting because Alfred Molina's character remembers Nina's name. Like he remembers what happened to her and she uses him at the end to essentially say like, hey, if I go missing, here's where I was, please give this information to the right people. Where Bo Burnham's character not only doesn't apologize, but when he knows exactly, you know, where she was and what was going on, he doesn't do the right thing yet again.
Yep. Exactly.
Yes. And something that I found very frustrating was the fact that a lot of these people that were bystanders, their justification was, well, we were kids. We were young. We didn't know what we were doing, including Burnham's character, which brings me to my favorite sequences of the film, which is the one with Alison Brie and the one with was she the director or something of the university?
Yeah, Connie Britton. Yeah, the dean.
Yes. Oh my.
I loved it. That scene with Connie Britton is, if Carrie doesn't get a nomination based on that, like that scene alone, like is just incredible to me. Incredible.
Yeah.
I love how, you know, the scene with Alison or Alison Brie Madison is her character. I love how calculated and calm Cassie is at all times. Like when she orders the ginger ale and the champagne and then pours her ginger ale. And like, I just love like how she's thought everything out and how calculated she is. And like, just determined to, like we've talked about, you know, accomplish these things that she wanted to accomplish on her checklist. And although they don't always go exactly how she, you know, plans them out to be, especially like, you know, like we said with the lawyer, she doesn't follow through. And like, even with Madison, you know, like Madison freaking out, shows up at her house. Again, because like, you know, I wrote down like she's putting all these people in these situations that were kind of parallel to Nina and making them question themselves. And, you know, especially like Madison being like, oh, well, that happened so long ago, or like the whole thing, like we were kids or whatever. And it's like, you know, Madison's a full-on adult now, and she thinks that she got drunk and slept with this man and is freaking out, you know? So I love that she puts them in these situations where they were before defending, you know, the person that needed to be called out, and now they're that person. You know what I mean? So I just love how calculated she is in what she's doing.
Yeah. And Alison Brie plays a really good drunk person. I think that's also really hard because you have to... I think that playing drunk probably is one of the harder things to do, because mm-hmm. you have to somehow, like, she's clearly someone who cares so much about her appearance, right. and she's obviously losing control of that. I mean, she literally tips over a whole glass of wine, which is a party foul. Having to balance, like, what is it like to feel intoxicated while not being intoxicated? And how do you have a person work so hard to keep themselves together as they're coming apart at the seams in 2 minutes? Because that's all the time she was allotted.
Right.
Right. Like, and also, like you were saying, just how do you be intoxicated in character? I think is a really interesting thing. And I also feel like while we're talking about, you know, acting drunk in this movie, the scenes in which you have Carrie Mulligan acting drunk, but she's like, it's not just that she's acting drunk, it's that layer of like she is acting within her role drunk, mm-hmm. I think are so fascinating, because there are, like, you start to notice, I think, on subsequent watches and in later scenes, there are little tells that she's not actually drunk, mm-hmm. I think, that she's put there, that I think are so fascinating. I feel like you said, if Carrie Mulligan doesn't get, you know, recognized for all the awards this year, her performance, I feel like it covers every range of human emotion and then some. And the levels on which she is acting, the amount of times that she is like playing her character who is playing a character, I think it's just fascinating.
I agree. And it can only be pulled off by somebody as talented as Mulligan. And there's something about, to me, actors that somehow, I mean, I'm not an actress, but I can imagine how tough it is to be an actor. And that within itself, it's, I can imagine it's tough, but to act that you're acting, I can't even imagine what next level of talent you must have to pull that off. And like you said, Mulligan pulls it off so effortlessly that I will be extremely upset if she does not get any recognition at all.
I'll be devastated. And, you know, I think that actually I wanted to talk with you ladies about what you think about. I know it's going. I think I saw that it's going in as a musical or comedy, right, for the Globes. Is that right? How do you guys feel about that?
It's difficult because half of me is like, how do I say this? I feel like often films that are about feminine issues are seen as lesser. And I also feel like the way that they sort films into musical comedy at the Globes often is like, oh, well, that's not a serious film, so we'll put it there. At the same time, it does have like the style of a comedy in many parts of it. And like, if you look, Emerald Fennell does call it a dark comedy.
Right.
So it's one of those things where I remember, I feel like, did they put Get Out into musical comedy? I feel like they did. And I feel like people were similarly kind of upset over that because it is hard.
So, yeah.
And I personally, like, I think the whole distinction between drama and musical comedy is kind of stupid because there isn't a binary in film. There are so many films that are like a tragicomedy or, you know, kind of half drama, half comedy. Like, I think even the last year, like trying to put something like Knives Out into musical or into comedy or drama, I think is hard. I think I remember like whenever they sorted Inside Llewyn Davis, I think they put like that comedy and I was like, seriously? So I do think that it really shows a flaw in the system. But at the same time, there's a part of me that's like, hey, it's probably got better chances in the comedy category. Like Carey Mulligan is more likely to win there. So whatever it takes. I don't really care. Like, if that's how she gets her award, then I'm fine with it.
Same. That's how I kind of finally settled on it. I'm like, you know what? Like, I don't want that, like, pushing it into a certain category to lessen the message it's trying to convey and lessen the story behind the film, right? But I agree. I also, like, I just wanted to get recognized. So that's, like, it's also, it's like, okay, put it in any category. Put it in all the categories so it gets recognized.
If we need to call it an international, a documentary, like, whatever it takes.
Yeah, no, I agree with you guys. I think that's where it has the better chances. And again, I'm with you. Whatever it takes for them to recognize the film, particularly Mulligan, yeah, I'm in. I'm all for it.
Well, yeah, and especially, I mean, how many of us have friends or family members that know nothing about a film and then it gets all these awards, then everyone's talking about it, and then it's like, oh, then they seek it out, right? Like, I remember people messaging me after the Oscars, like, so this Parasite film, I'm like, where have you been? I've been on Parasite for months now. Like, yes, join the train, watch Parasite. You know, it's the same thing. It's like, as much buzz as it can create, like, as long as people watch this film, that's all I really care about, so.
That's true.
Can we go back and talk about the lawyer a little bit? Because I did want to talk about him because I thought it was interesting how she kind of uses him as like her, you know, saving grace kind of. And do you think she also used him in that way so that he could kind of like come to terms himself with what he was dealing with because she could see his remorse, right? Because she could have. I was thinking about it and I'm like, why did she choose him to leave it to? Like, was it because he was a lawyer? Was it because he was, you know, the only other person that seemed to be grappling so difficultly with this? Like, cause she could have left it to, Laverne Cox's character. I can't remember her name now, but I'm like, why did she, you know, do you think there was like strategy in leaving it to the lawyer so that he could feel like, you know, he could live, you know, like he could, I don't know. What is the word I'm looking for? Like,
I feel like she's offering him a path to redemption in a way.
Yeah.
And I do think there is also strategy in that, like, obviously he's a lawyer. He's someone who can take on this case and who knows how to legally deal with it. But I also do think that maybe she is offering him this sort of path to redemption, saying, like, there is a way if you actually take, like, real tangible steps that you can, you know, make yourself a better person. And I think it's interesting because the film isn't saying that like all men are bad per se. I think it's very significant that her father is not shown to be a bad man.
Like
he seems really nice. I think it's important that this isn't just someone saying like, oh, men are terrible, like you know, screw them all. They're saying that like all men are complicit in the patriarchy, which I think is a slightly different thing. And they're saying that a lot of men who think they're nice guys aren't nice guys, but there are men who are capable of being good and also like changing themselves and you know, actually having the revelation and doing something about it. And I feel like she's showing that like he can take steps to right the wrongs that he's done in a way and giving him that path to it as sort of her final act, I think really shows what makes Casey so interesting as a character is that for all that she's seeking vengeance and for all these things that she's doing, it's because she wants people to be better. She's not going out and killing these men. She's trying to teach them a lesson and like make the world a better place and prevent bad things from happening to people like happened to Nina. And I think that like that to me is why she's more compelling than, for example, like an Amy Dunn type character in Gone Girl, is that Casey is someone who seems to believe that people are capable of change and she's just trying to do good, not for herself, but for like others, I think. And I don't know, there's something to me that she's such a complex character. And I feel like her deciding to leave that to Alfred Molina's character is such an important part of that.
Yeah, I love what you're saying there. I absolutely agree. And it's funny how then, you know, I'm just thinking back to little things, right? Like that book of you know, the check marks that she's making. And you think, again, like you think in the previews, it's kind of like a kill list, right? Or like, it's like, you know, she's, but when you think about it in the way that you're saying, Nicole, it's like, okay, this is how many men I've changed, right? Like from that experience, I've changed this many men and tried to make them better people so that this won't happen to someone else, right? Like, it, and in my head, I'm like, is she just going to try to do this to all the men in the world? And it's like, oh no, she's just trying to do this to as many men as she can so that she can change what's happening in the world and make people better.
Yeah, but she's not necessarily the most successful, because I think back to Sam Richardson's character, who we see in the first scene with his buddies, and he's there with Adam Brody, who's the first victim that we see of hers, and she ends up taking her home still, and then there's the realization where she sees Bo Burnham, she quickly shows that she's sober, and he's like, oh my gosh, you're that crazy girl that scared my friend. And it's like, you know, her intentions are so pure in a sense, because again, it's about protecting other women the way that no one protected her best friend. Mm-hmm. But she also continues to give people, she's like, I'll scare them into being better. And that doesn't always work, because until you take accountability, like that Alfred Molina character, you're not actually going to look to be a better person.
Right.
Yeah. And it speaks, the, like Nicole was saying, such a, the complexity of Cassie's character, such a selfless act to let that event. And I think it's also, it speaks of her dealing with trauma and trying to, take things in her own hands, but not in a of course in a gruesome way, which I was hoping for. I was so ready to see bodies and yeah. limbs and everything. But no, yeah, same thing with the blood in her leg. I was like, oh snap, and I was like, oh jelly donut. And, yeah, which also concerns me, because I'm like, oh my god, was I actually rooting for this? But
right.
Yeah, but to let this incident pretty much consume her whole life. She stops. She's evidently she's smart. She was on her way to become a doctor, but she drops out and she just works in a cafe. This just overwhelms her and it takes over her life. And she continues to do it in a very, again, and not in a very like you guys said, in a pure way, with pure intentions, until the very end, which, of course, it's going to, that third act, it's what's shocking a lot of viewers, and it's what's evoking all these conversations. That third act is certainly the break. You either make your audience love this film, or it just disappoints the audience. I have heard so many people say that the first two thirds of the film are amazing. They love it. But the third act is what breaks them from loving the film. And I've heard differently, myself included. I love everything about it. And that third act is so symbolic for me that it made me love it even more. Where are you guys standing with the third act that, of course, inevitably we had to talk about?
So I also loved it. On the first view, okay, so let's say what happens, right? So she goes to this bachelor party and we find out that she knew she was going to die there, right? Like, which is why she left all the like things behind, the thing for the lawyer, the thing, you know, she knew what she was doing. And I think that goes back to the theme, right? Of like, this consumed her life and she knew and was totally willing to die for the cause, right?
Yeah, yes. I think there's a reading of the film that's very legitimate that you almost have to see her as, I'm not sure that suicidal is the right word, but it does seem like she feels like without her best friend in her life and with, you know, she couldn't go on with med school knowing what she knows about the people that she was surrounded with. Yeah. And it feels like the fact that she puts herself into all these dangerous situations also proves that, like, she's not really concerned about dying.
Right.
Like, she's right. kind of come to terms with that already. 100%. And so it does feel like she purposely goes into this situation knowing that there's a high likelihood that she's not coming back out of it.
Right. And to be honest, the first time I saw it when, you know, when she ends up, you know, again, spoiler alert, being suffocated by this the person who, you know, raped her best friend, I was in disbelief. I'm like, no. Like, she's going to pop up and yep. be fine. Or, you know, and then even when they, not to laugh, but I'm sorry, I'm thinking about Schmidt. Yes. He will always be Schmidt. I don't care what anyone says. You know, who is the other guy's best friend. When they're, like, burning her body, I was just like, this is, no. I was like, that's not her. Like, what's happening? Like, I was in such disbelief. But then even on the first, because at first I was like, I was just in such disbelief. I was like, this cannot be happening. And then even when, you know, the sirens are happening at the wedding, when they're coming to get these men, I was, even on the first watch, like I said, I was like, oh, hell yeah. Like, this is amazing, you know? So, and then again, it was even better on the second watch. Like you said, Rosa, I think it makes it for me. Like, I love that it didn't end the way we all thought it was maybe going to end, right? But I'm not gonna lie, I was in utter disbelief the first time I saw it. I was like, no, why is her body still so limp? You know, when it's laying there on the bed and she's dead, I'm like, and you know, and then Schmidt comes upstairs and he's like, oh, the stripper's dead, like, haha, like, this isn't the 90s, dude, like, you know, whatever. I'm just like, yeah, like, what's going on here? Like, did he actually suffocate her? And then, like, realizing that she's actually dead, I was just in such disbelief.
I was too.
She's our hero, right? Like, she's the hero in the film for us, and the fact that she's dead is like, no, that's not okay. But it is.
It's funny because I watched it while Skyping with my friend Dan, who also had a screener. So we watched it at the same time, and it was his second time seeing it. Oh. And apparently my reaction was just hilarious. I sat there like with my mouth open, like, no, this can't be happening.
Right.
But, and I have to say, I love Max Greenfield in this role so much. He's so funny. I feel like every year there's like someone who has a very small role in a movie that I'm just absolutely obsessed with. Last year it was Andrew Scott in 1917. This year it's Max Greenfield in Promising Young Woman. Like, the way that he's like, why is the stripper dead? Yeah. Is so funny to me. And I think that one of the best things about this ending, though, and I think it's one of the best things about the movie, and I think it's one of the things where it's so important that it was made by a female director, yeah. is that I think if there was any amount of, like, sexual anything in this ending, I wouldn't be okay with it. But the fact that, like, because he's suffocating her with this pillow, he almost doesn't touch her as he's killing her, I think is what makes it viewable in a way. And the fact that, like, we only ever see people reacting to that video, we never see the video, is so important. Because that's what keeps it from feeling exploitative or feeling cheap or, you know, irresponsible. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's such a credit to Emerald Fennell's direction of this. But I do, like, the first time I was like, no, this can't be happening, this can't be real. And then I thought about it more, and the second time I watched it, I was like, no, this is the only possible ending for the point that she's trying to make.
Absolutely.
Because the point is that, like, the patriarchy does always win in the end.
Yes.
And I think it is important, if once you piece together that, like, she went into it knowing that this was what was going to happen, like, it's not that her agency was taken from her, like, she chose this for herself. I think that's a very important part of it. But I think the point is that at the end of the day, like, the patriarchy wins, but she has this final ace up her sleeve. And when those cop cars show up to that wedding, like, I've never been more excited for something in a movie.
It was euphoric.
Because it was the idea that, like, the way that we have to change things, I think, is partially through the legal system, because, like, without that in place, like, the actual everyday things can't change. And I think, I don't know, I think it's so smart, and I think the way that she's able to evoke those reactions from you as an audience is so important.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think with the character too, like, up until that point, like, you knew that she lost so much, but I think, especially, like, on a rewatch, because I did also have to rewatch it the day after, it's like, she pretty much died with Nina. Like, her personhood left with her friend. And so the shell that kind of remains, she's not super attached to. And I think that going in there knowing that it's like, look, if this goes south, there's still something that I did, that I went out with a fight, that I scathed the people who scathed me. And I think that's so powerful. And I also think that, you know, like if she was sitting in a car watching it all happen, like, yeah, it would be really nice, but like there wouldn't have been that visceral reaction, I think, when we finally saw them like meeting some form of justice. Like, I don't think we would have been excited, but I think it would have been like a little hokey. And this way it really kind of demonstrates just how much, especially women, but lots of people lose because of the patriarchy, and you know, not shying away from the huge losses that we sustain from it. And I just find that to be so much more powerful than if it was a, you know, she rolls up with like a cigarette saying like, yeah, see, I fooled you all kind of thing. So.
Right. And that's like exactly what Nicole said. Like, this was the only, you realize like this was how it had to end, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so symbolic. And unfortunately, it's the direct reflection of reality. Not that long ago, and we've been seeing in the news that people in the military have been found dead and after being sexually abused, again, result of the patriarchy. So it, to me, I loved it. I loved every single, I was also shocked. But sadly, I realized she was dead. Because, you know, that shot of the morning after, and it's a direct shot towards the bed, but you have the lights from the window just reflecting on her body. It's pretty much like an evangelical scene, and you're yeah. like, okay, yeah, she's gone. yeah. And yeah, it was shocking, and it certainly shocking the first time around, but like you ladies were saying, it's the only way to end a story like this. And in my opinion, it was kind of foreshadowing in a sense, because throughout the film, like you guys just stated, she is doing all this purely, but only in this third act is where she directly physically goes against this guy, and she physically goes to maliciously do something to him, and she knew that doing that was going to cause a reaction, and again it was inevitable that he was going to fight back. And men are stronger physically than women are, so sadly the only way to keep her quiet was to literally suffocate her. Right. Which was just heartbreaking to watch, but unfortunately it's reality.
Well, I loved, you know, how very, and again this goes back to what an amazing actress Carey Mulligan is, how matter of fact she was about so many things, like especially like, you know, with the Connie Britton scene and with this scene at the end, she mentions it just as casually as they want to cover it up, right? Like, and it's so like that's some of my favorite stuff. Like, you know, when who's the guy that what's his name? The one that
Chris Lowell, the actor
who played him in the film. I can't remember. Whatever, it doesn't matter. He, you know, is playing along with the whole stripper thing because they think she's a stripper at the house at the bachelor party. And, you know, he's just going along with it again because, like, he doesn't want to upset his fiance or whatever because he's a good guy, right? And then she gets him upstairs in the bedroom by, you know, just the two of them, and she handcuffs him. And so then he's like, "What's your name?" And she's like, "Oh, Nina," you know, and he's like, and his demeanor immediately changes, you know, and she's like, "Well, what do you mean?" You know, it's like, why can't we talk about her? You know, just the same as like the Connie Britton scene where Connie Britton's character seems to take it super seriously. But then when Cassie calls her out, like, "Well, this was reported to you and you didn't do anything about it." And, you know, it's like, she's casually mentioning it, and these people, it's like then all of a sudden it's like taboo to talk about it. And I thought that was something interesting that I wanted to make sure I pointed out, because it's like they, you know, people don't want to talk about this stuff, but she's so casual in the way she brings it up that it doesn't seem like such a big deal. And then they realize how big of a deal it is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, it is kind of like that. Let's sweep it under the rug because we're here to protect the man, even though his actions have a ripple effect of hurt. And it's like, you know, I looked it up. His character's name was Al Monroe, which is a great plain person name. You know, he acts like, okay, I get to move on with my life, not because I've made any changes to who I am as a person, not because I've atoned for anything. It's just I'm older and I'm entitled to, because now I'm a fancy doctor, be respected for who I am and essentially have my previous misgivings, which resulted in someone dying some way. You know, essentially say like my record is expunged from history because that's what I'm entitled to. So that's a very interesting point.
And that, like, that for me is what this whole theme is, right? Is like, this is again, like a blip on his record. For him, it's like, oh, this dumb thing I did when I was young, it's not that big of a deal. But for Nina, like, it literally cost her life. And then Cassie as well, like, it, you know, she was willing to die for this and did. And that's where, like, again, trauma and things that people deal with, like, that people are dealing with every day, you know, it controls their life, whether we see it or not, you know? And for this man, it was just a blip on his radar, you know? And that's why, like, that scene with Cassie's father, when after, you know, Ryan, Bo Burnham's character, is over for dinner, and then her father says, like, you know, we really miss Nina, but, like, we missed you too. Like, her father knows, like, we were saying, like, she's a shell of herself. Like, she's not who she is anymore. Her person died with Nina. And yeah, I just think for me, that's what this like overall theme and message is that, you know, this changes people's lives and it's a blip on the timeline for others.
Yeah. That scene was so infuriating to me. I was boiling. just seeing how quickly he somehow, having literally a cadaver next to him, he somehow became the victim out of nowhere. And then how he was all of a sudden worried about his job and his future and his life. Yes, right. It was certainly an infuriating scene, but it worked. It certainly worked, because it that scene alone speaks volumes of everything that's going on right now and everything that's been going on for decades, for years, for centuries. So yeah, I think it definitely, again, third act, it worked perfectly for me, and yeah, I just love it. So yes, it seems like we are almost nearing to ending this episode. Is there any last thoughts about the film?
I hope people listen to this, and maybe people that didn't love the third act as much as all of us did, I hope we change their minds. Like, I hope they can see, you know, how it really makes the film and not breaks it. That's all I hope. I hope people that didn't enjoy it, you know, and I just always like, I love when films create conversations and make people feel things. And it's funny, 'cause like, sometimes I'll talk with some of my coworkers or friends or whatever about films, and they're like, you know, they're heated about a certain thing or that happened or didn't happen or whatever. And I'm like, and they're like, oh, but I didn't like it. And I'm like, really? Because like, when's the last time you felt this way about a film? You know, like realizing that like, it's okay to feel things about the stuff we're consuming. And just because maybe it upsets you or, you know, frustrates you doesn't mean you didn't like it. Like, yeah, I was extremely upset when I realized she was dead in the end. But then I realized like, oh, this makes the film so much better, you know? So maybe everyone just, you know, and this is a theme in the film as well, change the way you look at things.
Amen. Couldn't have said it better.
I will also add that I just think this entire cast is so amazing. Obviously, like, Carey Mulligan's performance is the best lead performance I've seen this whole year, but Bo Burnham is amazing. Laverne Cox is amazing. Max Greenfield, in a very small role, does so much. Alison Brie is great. Connie Britton is great. And also, Jennifer Coolidge as her mother is so fun. Like, I love that she's in this so much. Yeah. And I also, like, cannot end this podcast without giving a shout out to the fact that I think this film has the best soundtrack of any movie this year. The way that they use music in this movie and the music that they use is just incredible. I love it so much. It's full of bops. And I think it also, like, there's so much that Emerald Fennell does with this movie to make it watchable, even though it's about such a dark topic. Yeah. And I just cannot talk about how much I love her direction enough. I think I'm so excited to see what she goes on to do from here on out, because she's a great actress, but she's also apparently a great writer and director. So I just want to sing her praises all day long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oscar campaigns for Carey Mulligan and Emerald Fennell start now.
Right now. I'm so afraid that this movie is going to pull like a Nightwalker and it's going to get in for screenplay and not for Carey Mulligan, like that did for screenplay and not Jake Gyllenhaal. But we'll see. Fingers crossed. Yeah. I really want her to get nominated for her Oscar because she should have multiple by now.
Yeah, wholeheartedly agree. And yes, I agree with everything you ladies just said. I hope this episode does bring a different perspective and angle of interpretation of the film, because, again, it's very important for us, particularly in the subject matter and such. Again, I can't thank you guys so much for joining me today. I seriously, and I am genuinely being honest here, I admire every single one of you and your lens and your perspective, and I'm a big fan of you girls and your writing and your content and everything you girls do, and I could not have been accompanied by better guests, so thank you to every single one of you. So yes, Morgan, where can people find you on social media?
I am on Twitter at MSMLRoberts.
Thank you. And Nicole, where can we find you on social media?
First of all, thank you so much for saying such lovely things. And thank you for hosting this. It has been such a great thing just to get to talk about this with you guys. But you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at NicoleAckman16.
Oh, thank you. Yes. And Erica, where can people find you on social media?
Yes. I also want to echo both what you ladies have said. Thank you so much. I have just been like foaming at the mouth to talk about this with women that, you know, I respect and value your opinions and your, like Rosa, like you said, everything you ladies do, I admire. And I'm such fans of all of you. So I'm so like, I have been waiting to talk about this for so long. So there's no one else I would have rather have done it with. Yes. But also you can follow me, on Twitter at erockreviews and Letterboxd erock114. So yeah.
Thank you. Yes, and you can find me at any social media platform at Rosa's Reviews. And please make sure you're following the In Their Own League page over at Twitter and Instagram, In Their Own League. And yes, make sure you like and you subscribe to our podcast, review, rate, comment. Anything really helps a lot. And again, ladies, thank you so much. This was a treat. Thank you. Thank you so much. And yeah, thank you to everybody that's listening. Hope to see you on the next episode. And as always, stay safe and take care.